You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Hello and welcome to the Everything is Black and White podcast. It's time for episode 8 of Get in the Bin with me, Andrew Musgrove, and...
Hi, series leader, Sam Mulliner.
How are we doing, Sam? You well?
Yes, I'm in good form. I'm pleased to say I survived last week's charity match. Thank you to everyone who did donate. I managed to get on the score sheet as well. I wasn't too achy. Some would say I did my resting on the pitch. So it all worked out happily ever after. And then the next day I got to witness a fantastic comeback at St. James's Park. Yeah, very, very good.
How many goals did you score in this charity game?
One.
I swear you sent me like a few different videos, but it was of all the same goal.
Yes, because it was set to different theme music.
But you survived, no injuries. You're not joining the likes of Sven Botman and Kieran Trippier and Tina Livramento in the physio's room?
No, as I say, I did most of my resting on the pitch. I'm not very sprightly. I was awful. There's no two ways about it. Absolutely awful. I look ridiculous. And it was a bit of a moment, really, where having looked at it back, you kind of make a decision going, right, do you book your ideas up and get yourself into shape? Because, you know, there might be one next year. Or do you just go, stuff it and have another piece of cake?
Another piece of cake, definitely.
Yeah, the cake was great.
Yeah, all for the cake. But yeah, tremendous cause, Alan Shearer Foundation. So great to see you guys alongside the other Newcastle United YouTube fan channel, Loaded Mag, coming together to raise vital funds, which I'm sure will be appreciated by the charity and Alan Shearer as well. You can watch highlights of the full game, if you so wish, over on Newcastle Fans TV. Do head over. And if you have any spare pennies, please do donate to the cause. Right, as we said, episode 8 of Get in the Bin. Before we get into our items, Sam, we have to talk about last week's episode, episode 7, which was stuttering run-ups versus ticket ballots. I refused to give in, even though I knew if it went to a vote, you would win. Currently, thanks to Toon Pool's retweet, we've had 375 votes and it is 59% in favour of ticket ballots to 41% of stuttering run-ups. I was winning this vote for the first 10 minutes of the vote, by the way, just to let people know.
So you voted for yourself on your account, the Chronicles account, the Everything is Black and White account, and that's how you were winning for a good 6 seconds.
Yeah, there was about 17 votes. I don't have that many burner accounts.
59-41 is a landslide, so the people, once again, are on my side. Thank you, everyone who voted.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I admit, I knew victory was not going to be an easy challenge on that one. Still stand by it. Starting run-ups, get in the bin. But yes, we have to award episode 7 to ticket ballots. There's still 10 hours and 16 minutes left to vote at the time of recording, so things could change, but I think we've probably got this one in the bin.
Does that make it 7-2 to me now?
Mate, in my house move, I've lost my calculator and I'm not very good at maths, so I couldn't tell you.
That's a shame.
I just refuse to admit the score. By the way, there's still time. Cool. We're gonna keep rolling and rolling and rolling. So I'm gonna get this back up to level pegging eventually. Right. Would you like to go first, or shall I?
No, you can go first because you really disappointed me last week.
Mate, it's a very annoying part of the game. But anyway, yes. So my item this week is social media in the nose. The ITKs, the tapping merchants, the non-journalists who make a name for themselves on social media. They make our jobs a lot harder. They give the people what they want in terms of information and stories, in inverted commas. And very few actually have any real facts behind it. And it just annoys me because not just me and my colleagues, but journalists, you know, across the platform get abuse when they write well-founded, well-researched, well-sourced stories. You know, we have rules and regulations to stick by. We can't just make things up. You know, they are codes we have to stick by. And, you know, the ultimate punishment for breaking these laws is prison. You know, it is that serious. We can't just make things up. And when people don't like the stories that are put out there, we get abuse. We get accused of making things up. We get accused of what have you. And I do see a lot of these in-the-know accounts kind of get away scot-free when things go wrong or when they are on the line tapping in a story. And it does wind me up because, you know, our profession isn't well paid. It is a lot of hours. It's not 9 to 5. You very rarely switch off. And we go through a lot to try and bring you guys the news and the facts and the stories. And we do it properly. And when I see people, usually faceless accounts as well, pretending they've got or claiming that they've got information and what have you, and getting praise for it and what have you. And usually I would say, and I'm guessing here, it's done without any real research or actual hard facts, and they've just become lucky at it. Yeah, it winds me up, and I think that should get in the bin.
Good to see you've come back with an actual issue this week. Well done. You had me up until you mentioned your financial aspect of things, that you were pleading poverty because you're not well paid. How much was the house you just bought?
What I mean is, if you get into journalism, you know, you'll be very lucky to get the money that the likes of Gary Lineker or Dan Walker are earning. You know, the on-the-ground journalism and reporters, you know, that's one of the first things to tell you when you go to university to study journalism. If you're here to get rich, you need to get out of this lecture room because you ain't getting well paid. And when you collate the hours that you work and what have you, and look, we're in a very privileged job, do not get me wrong, the cover of Newcastle United is unbelievable, to bring you these podcasts and to be paid to talk about Newcastle United, it's not lost on me how lucky I am. But my point being is that the hard work we go through to then see it poo-pooed because someone with a faceless account who's just sitting in their armchairs tweeting out, that really does annoy me.
Yeah. Good to see you explain yourself there from your ivory tower. I think this all kind of started in lockdown, didn't it? These in the nose or ITKs.
Oh my God, it goes way back further
but
than
it,
that.
They came, I know it goes back a bit further then, but it became more of a forefront, especially within the Newcastle fan base, didn't it? Because people just had nothing to do and people had Twitter fame and just all that just nonsense and guff. I'm reasonably proud of you for this week for bringing up an actual issue that's not someone not having a proper run up to kick a football.
Amazing.
No.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Well, no, mine is very similar. I say very similar, but it's like having a, you know, sticking up for the working classes, as you journalists clearly are. But mine is 8:15 p.m. kickoffs. I don't like them. It's too late. You can't get home. It's ridiculous. I'm not keen.
I've got a question on this one. I'll let you explain a bit more about your point in a second. Are we also putting into this week's show how late the TV companies and Premier League allow the changes to kickoffs to be made? Because often we are waiting well past the so-called deadline for changes to kickoffs, and they are often the 8:15 p.m. kickoffs down in London, which then obviously skews everyone's plans. Or is that a separate element that we could bring to the table?
I mean, you could. You're splitting hairs, but it is all very much intertwined, isn't it? I know it's a bugbear of the FSA, the Football Supporters Association. It's an absolute nightmare for fans who want to book trains early. You know, hotels are affordable if you can book them well in advance, but you just can't do that, and then you're kind of stuck, really, if you don't drive, or you have a problem driving long distance or whatever. You've got no real way of getting home, and you know, we're all carbon zero, and you know, looking at our carbon footprints and all that nonsense. Well, it's not nonsense, but you know what I mean. And the fact that there's no public transport for football supporters at the end of a game, travelling back from London or wherever, it doesn't matter. This isn't just a Newcastle United fan problem. This is nationwide. It's not on, really. It's not. And as always, it's left for your common working man, your average Joe fan to pick up the cost and foot the bill. And it's just pandering to TV companies and whatever again, who really are the force and the funds behind football.
I think this is going to be quite a close one, because this is something that really does irritate me. And when the Chelsea game was switched, I did try and get in contact with a few of the TV companies, and I got in contact with the Premier League as well, just to try and find out a bit about what consideration was given to fans. Because you're right, you know, some fans try and plan ahead, so they will book accommodation, they will book travel, and then there's
time off work.
Yeah, days off work. Then they dealt this blow of a change in fixture. Now, the Premier League did come back to me. They pointed me to a link on their website, which kind of explains how the games are chosen for broadcast. And then they added a note to the email, which said, "Please note our matches are subject to potential change, and so we would genuinely advise checking with the relevant clubs for guidance on scheduling of matches prior to purchasing tickets or booking travel or accommodation. We also guide supporters where possible to purchase flexible travel and accommodation options." So that was the Premier League's response to that. For me, I don't think that's good enough. I think that's kind of kicking it down the road, sort of. From my understanding, the club get very little say, if any at all, on the timings of games and stuff. You know, they've also got other elements of play that the police have to, the police can have a say and so. But it really does come down to TV companies and the Premier League. I guess the TV companies would argue, well, we've paid for these matches, we can decide when we broadcast them. And sadly, it does appear, and we haven't got responses from the TV companies, so they will maybe argue they do show fans consideration. But it's, on the face of it, our opinions definitely, when you look at these changes of kickoffs, it doesn't appear that they've considered fans at all, especially those that have to travel.
Yeah, I mean, with TV companies as well, that we know that they are vitally important for the game. They are. Obviously, it makes, not everyone can travel to games, especially away games, as we covered last week in ticket ballots. So it's important that these games are televised. Of course it is. And obviously the revenue that generates from not just the UK with Sky and TNT and the BBC with Match of the Day, but around the world, the global TV rights is massive, obviously. So it is hugely important. All I just think is to just be a tiny bit more consideration. That's all. Tiny bit more consideration about the timings and the announcements of when these fixture changes happen. There's just not enough. There just needs to be a little bit more consideration, because it's not fair. It's not fair on the travelling supporters. And you're saying that bit on the Premier League website to purchase flexible travel and whatnot. Well, that costs extra, a lot extra. And if you're booking hotels or whatever, that costs extra too for a flexible tariff. It can be up to 30 or 40 quid a night more expensive. Again, that's part of a wider problem, a cost of living problem. But, you know, it's still not on. There just needs to be a little bit more consideration. I don't think enough is done for your kind of your bread and butter consumer, your traveling home and away fan.
And I guess, you know, it would be extra work for the TV companies and for the Premier League, but there's no reason why they couldn't employ someone to reach out to the train companies and what have you, and they could be striking up deals, and you know, fans would really appreciate just the extra work that the TV companies could do to show a little bit of consideration to the fans.
Happens in the continent, doesn't it, in Europe, where their kickoffs aren't until 9 o'clock, but they can all still get home at night because the public transport runs a hell of a lot later than ours. So it's one of them. Like, there was like the lads from our channel who traveled over to Milan. They had a bit of a nightmare, but they could still get back on public transport in the end, and that would have been a reasonably late kickoff. It was the early kickoff over here, but it was still, obviously they're an hour ahead over there. But I just find it a bit like they're sticking two fingers up at your travelling support, and you know, these Monday night games, these midweek games that want to be staggered for TV or whatnot. I don't see the benefit of that anyway, because let's use this week as an example. Look, TNT do a great job with the Champions League, love their coverage. And Lindsay Hipgrave as well does a fantastic job presenting for TNT on the Premier League. But if you're, when they're showing three games of an evening, 2 half-7 kickoffs, 8:15, you know, you're only watching if you're a fan of these clubs anyway. And then if you're a neutral, you're just going to pick the best one of the game. You're not really going to split into two games, are you? Really, you're going to watch the most attractive game for the neutral, the two biggest teams playing. I don't see there really any need to stagger the kickoff times. I don't think it makes sense.
We'll get on to potential solutions. I've mentioned one there, but there might be some other ideas that Sam has got. Of course, as a traveling away fan to the home games, Sam suffers more than most with the late kickoffs.
You say that though, but for the away games, I don't travel as much because I've not got as far to go.
Yeah, very true. So how have you found the earlier kickoffs? I mean, we've seen a few 12:30 ones. We've got Spurs coming up as well. The 12:30 kickoff. I guess obviously we talk about the A15 kickoffs and you can't get back, but also, you know, if you're going to travel up on the morning of that game, you're hedging your bets on transport actually running well, which often it doesn't in this country because it's not very good. And the alternative to that is to book a hotel the night before, which is added cost. So there is also an argument you could put the 12:30 kickoffs in the bin.
Or find a charity match to play in the day before. Yeah, I mean, the early kickoffs, I kind of don't mind as much. I wouldn't say I'm a huge fan of them, but I don't mind them. I'm up early anyway with children and whatnot, so I've no issue leaving early and driving up. The early kickoffs aren't ideal, mainly because we've got a horrendous record in them. But I can deal with that every now and again. And sometimes they're a necessity because of like local derbies and whatnot, and that they they don't want people who have been in the pub all day going to games at 5:30 kickoff, 7, you know, the later times under the lights. So I get that. It's a kind of necessity. I know the teams that play in Europe regular aren't a big fan of them, but this all boils down to the 3 p.m. blackout, doesn't it? a lot could be solved by this, but that's one that's going to be saved for another day, I feel. Yeah,
one that we could both definitely, we probably wouldn't even need a second item, to be fair, when we do eventually discuss that one, because I feel like that would be another one that we'd both agree on that can get in the bin. And to be fair, I've got, I'm in support of your point tonight, this evening, this morning, whatever time of day you listen to this, because the late kickoffs, especially from a Newcastle point of view, is very frustrating. I mean, it's frustrating for any fan because the game will finish at a time when you can't get a train out of the capital or you can't get home. So the additional cost is quite something. And yet, from Newcastle point of view, that away end is always packed out and they will support their club no matter the hardship of getting home. We'll come back to your point then in a minute, though. The in the nose, what's your view on them, Sam? Let me know how you feel about them.
I've been back and forth with them. A couple of emotions to hit you with, like anger and just irritated, brackets general, about them. Sometimes I actually feel a bit sorry for them, which is how I felt during lockdown, really, because they're obviously in want of some attention. Maybe they're not lucky to have a lot of friends or whatever, and they're living this life vicariously online where, you know, they're getting clicks and you know, followers and popularity and this, that, and the other, all based on, you know, a lie. When they're probably just sat at home in their Transformers pyjamas in the mother's spare room. It made me feel a bit sorry for them. Obviously not all, but yeah, I just don't understand it, really. Want to be a playtime journalist. I don't know.
That bubble just appeared on your screen again.
I don't know why that happens.
We're having a thing with Sam's camera where every so often a thumbs up in a bubble appears on his screen.
I thought it was you agreeing with my point.
No, I'm not touching the mouse here. And even though I do agree with your point, it's happened again. So, well, at least you're happy with the show, and hopefully everyone who's watching it will do the same as well. Give a thumbs up to the show, people. Yeah, look, in the nose. They just irritate me. And I think there's a certain platform which has helped grow them to a certain extent, because even though I don't follow any of them, they're now in my newsfeed consistently, and it just muddies the water so much, because sometimes in the world of journalism, especially back in the day when it wasn't so prominent on social media, you would see something written from an actual fan, or I've seen this, or you know, and that would then spark you, and you go, right, I'm going to go and ask the person I know, who I trust, who's involved with whatever, you know, what's the case here? And now you're just seeing so many accounts who claim that they've got facts. It just muddies the water. And I feel sorry for fans.
And you know what, as well, there are now, like, kind of, not media companies, because that's not what they are, but they'll have, like, I don't want to name them as well, because you'll get panicky and, like, start sweating about lawsuits again. But I'm a loose cannon. You've got to control your guest.
Do not name them. Skirt around the edges.
I'm not going to name them. But yeah, there's like that will employ kids and just part-time journalists to just make up these guff rumours that just are just so unfounded and pathetic. All in need of clicks and ad revenue and all that guff. Basically pandering for either with what supporters want to hear or something so shocking that they just have to click on it. And it does make a journalist's life, I imagine, a lot more difficult when you're reporting things that, you know, isn't going to be popular. and stuff that fans don't want to hear. Like, this summer's going to be huge. If, like, you know, there's going to be so many rumours flying around about Bruno, about Alex Isak. It's going to be horrendous. And it's deep down, I think people are absolutely sick of him, and that they arguably should get in the bin. There's a case for it. That's all I'm saying.
I think it's split, though. I don't think everyone's sick of it. And it is fans that I do feel sorry for, because when they're going on social media, what they're seeing is the tweet. They're not necessarily looking at the account. They're not necessarily looking at the person doing it. They're looking at the information in the tweet, taking that, and then, you know, texting a friend, texting a family member, saying, have you seen this? I mean, there was an incident the other day, and I was stopped 3 or 4 times. I was at the game 3 or 4 times, and people were asking me about a certain something that had been tweeted out. And I was like, but it's come from an account which isn't from a legit journalist, who hasn't got a massive platform, who hasn't, you know, got that profile, and yet they weren't too bothered about the actual person. They were bothered about the tweet, and I think a lot of people don't or aren't able to. That's no disrespect to anyone, but aren't able to separate the in the knows from the journalist, and they're just looking at the information. Then when it doesn't turn out to be true, obviously they get disappointed, they get angry. But all I would say to the people watching it, I would just say, just check the account, check that it's come from a reputable source. I'm not even saying it has to be a Chronicle lie. I'm saying just check it's come from a reputable journalist that you trust and that you know, because we are out there. But you're right. It does make the job harder, because sometimes you see something that's tweeted out and it's gained so much attention. And then you're like, well, are we going to have to do something on this, even though we know it to be absolute rubbish? And then you go to your person who you trust, and they're like, well, why should we offer any comment on this? Why should we come back? Because you know it's not correct. I know it's not correct. We know it's rubbish. But then you're like, yeah, but it is gaining.
You then shoot it down, you get criticised because the original story is something that the fans want to hear and want to believe.
And I think the interesting part about this summer will be, does the increase in the no accounts actually work in the favour of proper journalism? Because people will wait for, whether it be my colleague, you know, Lee Ryder or Kieran Kelly, or whether it be other people in the Northeast journalism.
Absolutely promoted. Damning that you've left out Aaron there.
I'm not gonna big his ego up. He's got an ego big enough to take out an entire stand. But my point being, I wonder if actually what we're going to start to see is people, you know, they will wait. They will wait for the actual journalist to tweet out their story, because they know it's going to be well researched. They know it's going to be well sourced. They know they've got a track record in breaking these stories. And hopefully in time, you know, the number of in the knows who gain real attention will decrease. And, you know, their prominence on social media will dilute, and we can get back to, you know, trusted sources and trusted journalists.
That does sound lovely.
It's not going to happen.
No, and like, think back to the takeover as well. Just, oh my God, horrendous daily updates during lockdown about the takeover, which didn't go through in the end, but obviously it did rekindle itself, thank God, and go through. But like, all these things with daily updates, I'm sorry, these deals don't happen in public. As we saw when it did go through, we only heard about it until it was nigh on done and dusted. That's how business gets done. It's not done in the public eye. It's not done on Twitter. It's not done on any form of social media. It's not done by anyone in their Transformers pajamas in the mum's spare room, as your mum and stepdad basically want you to move out because you're 26 and you haven't got a girlfriend yet. It's one of them where these deals get done in private, and they're, you know, proper journalists report on them when they are done, when it is actually news. If everything got reported that stuff might happen or might happen here, you know, you'd just be clogged with utter crap for the entirety of a transfer window or whatever. It's horrific.
And I don't want to come across patronizing to our viewers and listeners, because, you know, we love you a lot, and everyone's entitled to go and get their information and stories from wherever you like. That's your prerogative. But I always just think, when you see these accounts tweeting stuff out, my first thought is, well, if they were so well connected and sourced, what is the person leaking this information to this account getting? Because they're not writing for a website which has millions of views a month. They're not on a podcast which has hundreds of thousands of downloads a month. They're not on a, you know, what are they getting from giving this information to someone, usually a faceless account, some not a faceless account, you know, some are very, very brash in what they do. But that's my first thought. What is the benefit? Okay, it might get retweeted a few hundred times, fair enough. But really, if you want something to get out, I think you come to a news outlet, you come to a trusted journalist who you trust to get the story out, who, you know, where they've got a massive audience off social media, because the world of football doesn't live on social media. You know, it still lives in online, still lives in newspapers, it lives in Twitter, and the other social media accounts are a very small part of it. And I do often think, yeah, you know, what would someone get from leaking to a young lad who's, you know, like you say, in his Transformers pajamas in his bedroom tweeting it out? What do they get from it?
Popularity and clicks and followers.
Yeah, they get that. What does the leak get from it?
Nothing.
And that's what always kind of lets me set things apart from the real deal to the not so real deal. But like I say, I don't want to come across patronizing, but that's just my view. That's just my take on things. But it does sound like, Sam, that you're going to kick this one in the bin.
We've not put forward any argument as to why mine shouldn't go in the bin.
Well, no, because I kind of agree with yours, actually, as well. It does annoy me. And it's not just a Newcastle United thing. It's across the Premier League.
It is. But games under the lights can be special occasions, can't they? And I don't dislike nighttime kickoffs. That's the only thing. Because games at night can be very, very special. Even like in the past 12, 18 months, we've had some absolute barnstormers under the lights. Semi-final, second leg, the PSG game, you know. But it's just that.
I think for me, Sam, the reason mine should get in the bin ahead of you, not ahead of you, ahead of your point. I mean, you can get in the bin if you want. With 8:15 p.m. kickoffs, like you say, nighttime kickoffs are not the worst thing in the world. They can be very special. There are changes to how these games are picked. There are changes that can be made to make it more suitable for traveling fans. As we've said, a solution could be the TV companies work with transport companies and strike up a deal. The Premier League maybe put a bit of money aside to help a train run past the normal allotted hours. Those changes can happen. The 8:15 p.m. kickoffs would be much better and much more accommodating to the traveling fans.
We need to renationalize the rail.
Well, yeah, you know, they could put a pot aside where you get massively discounted hotel accommodation in London, for example, paid by the Premier League. Something like that. You know, there's enough money around the game in which something could be sorted out. Within the nose, the solution is just stop it. Just get rid of them. Because there is no solution to make it any better. They are an annoyance. They make legitimate reporting on the beautiful game a lot worse. They lead people down the garden path. They are done for engagement. They're done for clicks. They're not done with research and sourced material. You know, they're done simply to hook you in and often break your heart because the information is wrong. And it just needs to stop. It just needs to end. Whereas your point, it's an annoyance, but there are things that could be done to make it better and easier for everyone, in my view.
Yeah. Okay. See what happens when you come with a proper argument and a proper issue, not just someone who's taking too many steps to kick a football.
I've just given you a false sense of hope and security that you can win this. I mean, we haven't set an end tally. I don't know whether we set it at like the first one to 30, perhaps, but
30?
30. We can keep going. We're on episode 8. There's enough to complain about.
Oh my god. Okay. See how many lawsuits we can get in that time. But yeah, no, I'll give it you this week. Well done. Yeah, proper issue that needs to go, and our lives will be more peaceful for it.
Thank you very much. So I win episode 8 of Get in the Bin. Social media in the nose are in the bin, thankfully. And make sure you head over to chroniclelive.co.uk for legitimate reporting on Newcastle United, because we do bring you some wonderful stories. Sam doesn't look too sure, but...
No, you absolutely do. I mean, you know, there are a few misfires, but, you know. I feel like that you're feeling in a similar way as when I binned Michael Owen. Do you feel cleansed and kind of refreshed?
I do. I feel like I've just been to a very expensive spa. Or massage. Yeah, and I do, because it is something that irritates me. It's irritated me for many, many years. It's just like when I get a text off my dad, you know, what's this about, blah, blah? And it's like, what? Like, where have you seen this? And he sends us the tweet, or he sends us the Facebook account that it's come from. And it's like, how weird, man. Come on.
Yeah. You know, really? I wish your dad would text me about, you know, that he's bought me like 5 tons of logs ready for this winter, but you know, still awaiting that text.
I'll let him know your address, Sam, and maybe you can organise that. Yeah, but the new house got a lovely, lovely log burner. And just to clarify, because Sam's kind of suggested I'm living in an 18 bed mansion, I'm definitely not. Okay.
Definitely not. I believe you.
But I have got a nice log burner in the new gaff. Thank you very much for asking. Sure. To you guys watching and listening, a pleasure as always. If you want to get in touch with me and Sam, you can do on the EIBW podcast at reachplc.com. If you've got any suggestions to what we could bring to the table, do let us know, because we're open to ideas. You know, it'd be really nice to have some suggestions from you guys that me and Sam have to fight out. That we haven't brought to the table ourselves. So do let us know. Get into the comments as well. Hit subscribe, hit follow. And for myself and Sam, we'll see you for episode 9.